Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing, 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome into another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. This is Rob D. Catch me on X at Deadpool Hitter. Catch me, Jeff, and Rob talking fantasy baseball every other week on the Pull Hitter Patreon. You can go over to patreon.com, put Pull Hitter Fantasy into the search bar. It'll take you right to my site. It's also my pinned tweet on X. So check that out every other week that we do our podcast. The episode goes there. You can get in for just $5 a month for that extra launch angle action. And that'll also give you access to the Pull Hitter Discord. You can come in there. There's well over 270 people discussing fantasy baseball all year round. Truly a good resource for your researching needs and value player evaluation and just fantasy strategy talks. A lot of good stuff over there. And I'm running a deal right now. You get two months off, for the full year if you sign up for an annual deal. So go over and check that out. And enjoy this episode with me, Rob, and Jeff. Enjoy. Thanks for listening.
Here's the pitch.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm Rob D. I'm here with Jeff Zimmerman, Rob Silver. Gentlemen, what's going on? February 9th, another day closer to spring training and baseball. You guys feeling it?
Oh, yeah. I was like, with mining the news, every like team is now putting out like kind of rehashing, but it's like what to look forward to in spring training. I'm like, oh great, there's 60 articles I have to kind of grind through.
But those email, are you talking about the email newsletter ones too?
Yeah,
there's some of those you can read 90 of them sometimes and maybe get one thing. Sometimes I'm like, is it worth even reading these emails?
It's kind of tough, but it's like, and the other problem is a lot of times they just rehash what they said in like October.
Yep.
There's a lot of that going on too. The rehashing was already going on quite bad. It's like I caught like two people with a straight cut and paste from a previous article. So it happens. It's like they got their work done and enjoying their time.
But, not all of us have enough substance to fill, let's say metaphorically, a 4-hour podcast with new material every single time. So sometimes you got to go back to the well over and over again.
Well, it takes us a year to build that up, you know.
So I'm blown away. Like there were five of you, right? There were five. I'm going to listen to it on the weekend. I'm telling my son I can't.
Five and a half.
There are five and a half people. Is there a special? Don't give away the like the spoiler in hour three. There was a special guest star that appears midway through.
No, one person couldn't take it. They had to bow out.
They had to bow out. So, oh, it was Toby, right? Toby like taps in at some point.
No, that was the year before.
That was the year before.
Okay. Where he tapped in. Yeah. Someone tapped out, and that same person, Phil didn't give him a chance to talk either. Phil just fucking didn't stop talking.
That's how Phil is. I don't understand how five middle-aged men can go like, and I've raised this before with you, Rob, can go 4 hours. So that's 20 hours combined without having to take a pee break. Like I just how collectively I would have set the over under at least like 3.5 pee breaks in 20 hours of collective time. It's remarkable that you guys were able to stick around for that long.
I had to go twice this time.
Yeah, there were people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you you were like, "Hey, Phil, can you tell me what's your favorite Excel formula to use?"
Boom. See, ya.
And you're out of here, knowing that you had a good 47 minutes before you had to be back to say, "Interesting. Do you ever find mistakes?" And then it's like, let's brew some coffee.
I raced back too, and he was still talking. And I was like, okay, I didn't miss anything. And then I went to the next person. No, yeah. I really do like my favorite part of that pod is, you know, all my pod, I really love to just hear what everyone's saying and then hopefully get something from that. You know, like really listen and get more out of the topic. And with that one too, it's just to sit here and I took tons of notes. Because I was trying to make like timestamps of like I wanted to make some audio clips of, you know, smart, you know, really extra cool, you know, portions of it. And I was just like I was two pages deep by the time we were an hour and a half in, and we were still only on the third bullet point.
So you know what a tremendous innovation would be, Rob, is if you took a 4-hour pod and edit it down to, let's say, an hour long, maybe an hour and 15 minute long podcast, just the best of, and you'd be called, you could put on the pod, like you're the editor, and then it would be an hour and 15 minute pod. I'm just throw that out there. And again, I say that as somebody who will spend 4 hours this weekend listening to the pod. So I will have listened to it next time we speak, I promise.
Yeah,
and I'm actually quite excited. I'm quite excited for it. So I joke because I love, and I'd rather listen to you guys for an hour and 15 minutes instead of 4 hours.
I'm shocked they wanted to do it that long too again, but the excitement level was in the DMs, and I said, all right, let's do it. You guys are ready to do it.
Is it possible they're just being polite to you because you're a good guy? So they're just being nice.
It could be.
It's possible.
Yeah. It's very, very possible. Very possible.
I'm joking. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. All right, let's get, and you know, actually, Rob, I mean, you've been busy this week too. You know, you were on RotoWire with James Anderson.
Tremendous. Who you had, like, also, how long did you and James go for?
An hour and 20, maybe.
Oh, so 25? Like a normal human pod.
A normal human.
Yes, James don't play that game. James doesn't fuck around with 4 hour pods.
1,000%. I know he has a little baby too, so I was like, you know, as soon as he's like, let's go, let's move on. We say what we have to say, and
Well, sure. Are we allowed to blame our kids if we don't feel like signing up for 4 hours? Like, so what does that say about the people who have kids who do sign up for the 4 hour pod?
I mean, poor Tanner there. Mike came in the middle of it, but they can like drive and cook the pizza while they were when they showed up.
That's right. Tanner crossed state lines during the podcast.
that was the favorite part of my podcast, just seeing and hearing Tanner again because it was much needed.
No, I'm excited about it. I was on James's RotoWire podcast, which is always jokes and hyperbole aside, a thrill for me. I love talking baseball with James, whether it's in Vegas over beers or watching minor leaguers I've never heard of before that James knows intimately when we're at First Pitch Arizona or on his podcast. So he's one of my favorite, sincerely favorite people in this silly world that we live in.
In the whole world, yes, 1,000%. And I told him the same thing you said. I'm going to have to reserve him for that a brief moment that he's there before he leaves. Got to get some James Anderson time before that's done. All right, on to some recent news transactions. Word on the street is that Jackson Holliday will play second base in spring training. This is going to definitely excite the drafters for sure. Get that all hype in the ADP bump. And I know, Jeff, you feel like safe that he's going to just be ready to go from, you know, day one, opening day on the Baltimore Orioles starting roster?
I'm pretty sure they're going to do it unless something, I don't know if it's so much with the picks, but if that's where he's going to play, that's what's going to be. I'm a little like, if he hit like he hit last year, I'm not excited. Like everyone is expecting some growth, but prospect growth isn't linear and maybe it's downward. So I kind of just assume they're going to do the same thing. So out of the prospects, he's kind of the one I'm the least interested in, even though he may have in the long term the most upside. Kind of puts the ball on the ground, doesn't really hit the ball hard. I mean, he plays great defense. Like all the real prospect people love him, or better, decent defense. So I don't know what the second base bit is. Like, they really can't bring in another lefty. Like, they want a lefty to play second base is what they're saying, but they don't get another lefty in the infield. I don't know what setup they're trying to do. I don't get that. Maybe he's just the backup second baseman that they're going to have. You know, it's like, we don't want Mateo playing second base. He's just a backup of, I mean, he's the bench bat in case someone gets hurt, you know, type of thing. If we have to sit someone, we don't want him in the lineup. But I don't get it. But
Sorry, James, Jeff, I don't understand what you don't get. I totally just, so it's like it's hour three here. I don't understand what part you don't get about what the Orioles are doing. I'm being sincere. I don't understand. Well, so I'm worried somebody listening at home doesn't understand what you don't get about what the Orioles are doing.
They came out and said that Holliday is going to play second base.
Right.
So they can get more left-handed hitters in the infield.
Okay.
But but he's just moving around. That there's no way to get. They don't have another left-handed infielder to play shortstop.
Right. Gotcha.
So I don't know
why. So why they would play him at second as opposed to short?
Short. Right.
Yeah, I'm confused on that part too, because I would think Westberg just stays at second and Gunner plays third, but maybe they just prefer Gunner and Holiday up the middle instead. And did that also just cement Ramon Urias more time at third? And I don't know. It
would be tremendous. And maybe this is the joke you were making, Jeff, and I'm just repeating your joke. It would be tremendous if this is all about how do we keep Jorge Mateo in the lineup as many times as possible. And that's what's driving out. You know, it's the old joke, like how many X does it take to screw in a light bulb? One to hold it in place and the world revolves around that person. Jorge Mateo is the lock in the Baltimore lineup. Everybody else has to move around to accommodate Jorge Mateo. I like that idea.
All right, so what about the point of the draft he is right now, 207?
Yeah, I mean, that was my question that was going to, like, so the projections don't love how a Holiday. I assume you'd sort of have to throw them a bit out the window because he's so young. But where do you, let's assume that he signed a long-term deal or they have announced before Vegas he has made the opening day roster and he's up to stay. How high do you think he gets?
120.
120, so like eighth round.
Yeah. Just on name and hype alone.
Jeff?
I've seen the top first 10 rounds. It's going to be... Yeah,
that's fair.
I think there's a lot of other... Like, we keep talking about people moving up. There's got to be someone moving down, too, at some point.
By definition, that's... Your math checks it. Whatever algorithm you've run that through, Jeff, every time somebody moves up in a draft, somebody else has moved down in that same draft. Yeah. Remind me where Jordan Walker, by the time the hype was at its absolute peak last spring, how high did Jordan Walker?
See, I thought it was the eighth round too. Eighth round.
And obviously Holiday is a higher ranked prospect for what, to the extent that means anything, than Walker was. Walker looked awesome in spring training, but he wasn't the number one prospect in baseball. So I don't know. Like if he's locked into that Baltimore lineup, somebody's going to pull the trigger at pick 100, like in the seventh round, I think.
Yeah, Jordan Walker main event was ADP 120 as early as 89.
Yeah.
And that's with like a couple of like 172s and 150s in there from like the first.
My memory, especially at my age, is a little bit hazy, is it was increasing though main by main, so that the average of the mains, yes, if you graphed it day by day through the mains, the average kind of misleads about where he ended up by the end of the main draft season last year. And I could see Holiday following a similar path this year.
Yeah, it seems that Zips is definitely the high man on him. Like, not too bad. Like, I guess, you know, that's assuming he plays the 641 plate appearance they have for him. But if he does, and he does the 12 and 13 with a 255 average and 93 runs, I mean, that's not terrible. But I don't know, Rob, because of the age, I don't know if you could really.
The other thing I'd throw out there, and I don't know if you talked to James about this when on your podcast, don't give it away, because I'll listen to that podcast in a week and a half when I'm finished your 4-hour podcast, is I did see James, who, again, I've said this, and it's not just a joke, is my go-to for all things prospect fantasy-wise. I saw him tweet out after the news came out that he was likely to make the opening day roster, saying, I just took my first share of Holiday in a 400 DC. So if James is at a point where he's taking him in 400 DCs, that also tells me something about how much value to put on the projections versus... not.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, that definitely is interesting. That's definitely something to factor in. That's a nice little juicy nugget there for sure.
I'm just repeating what I saw on Twitter. Like, yeah, sometimes there's fake news on Twitter. I don't think James put fake news on Twitter, but it's possible that's fake news. But that's how I remember it, at least, is that he took his first shares of Holiday. So you know, like with all these guys, you don't want to get caught up in the FOMO and just the hype, but he's gonna, this is a sexy pick.
it is a sexy pick. Do you guys think there's any movement in some of the other guys, like a Jordan Westberg? You think there's less love for him? Maybe if someone feels like, you know, he's not going to get as much PT as he was prior.
We'll have to see if it changes. He was a tough one anyway, because being a right-hander at that park, he was like none of his home runs. Like he was almost you have to stream him on the road, try to get his full value. I think he's got talent, but the park might hold him down just like a lot of those guys in Detroit.
Yep.
This whole team it's just really tough to find playing time with so many decent guys out there. Like Colton Cowser, like, is he going to play? Like what's going on there? Probably not. But a lot of teams could do it. The Heston Kerstead, I don't think he's going to play much either. So they have a lot of talent, and they've traded one off for a starting pitcher. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes to the trade deadline, they want to add another arm to help them with the playoffs.
Yep. All right. Mr. Clayton Kershaw, back to the Dodgers. We're expecting some kind of July, August return, perhaps. I guess my question is, I was always debating what the right time to take him in, like a draft champion. It was like round 38 sometimes, even round 40 available. But do you think anyone is going to draft him and stash him come main event season? What do you guys think?
Someone will try.
Someone will try, yeah. That's a good answer.
We'll have to see, like, where are the other ones? I was kind of surprised how high DeGrom was going for the half year. Like, he's being taken in OCs almost universally in it and not, like, at the end. Like, they're using a legit pick. So
that's wild.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one, like, I don't – it seems like some people would take the chance on Kershaw. Let me see, on the online championship – oh, I don't have it. It's going back to the other one. But it's definitely – we'll have to see if it does change with people. But if I was to do it, God, I just never can make it. I'd have to have someone a little bit quicker. Like I'll probably take – if I was to take a chance on anyone, it'll be the random starter that got hurt during spring training and, it's going to be out 2 or 3 weeks. I'd rather know right away than have to hold that whole time. I don't know. He's talking like the Orioles, you know, maybe John Means, take a chance on that, on someone like that. And just know you'll find out in a month instead of waiting months to figure out if you're going to get him or not.
Yeah. I mean, let's say there was the top pitching prospect in baseball. So we know he's going to open the top pitching prospect in baseball was going to open in AAA. And, James Anderson says this top pitching prospect is likely going to be in the minors until the All-Star break. And then there's a very good chance that this top pitching prospect could get called up sometime just before, just after the All-Star break, and then likely stick on the team. And it's a good team that this pitcher is on. Would you consider drafting? And James is like, I've got sources. I feel so confident this is how it's all going to play out. Would you consider drafting that top pitching prospect in a fab league?
No. I guess I'd have to consider it.
Yeah. So I think that so my answer is probably not, because I value the bench spots.
Me too.
But there is somebody who quite reasonably says, I'm going to draft them and I'll see how healthy my team stays. And I'll just go week by week and we'll see how this goes, and I'll do my best to hold on for dear life there, and I will play with six bench spots, because a healthy top starting pitching prospect is worth so much in fab. That's a $200 fab player that bench spot in my mind is worth enough. What I would say is Kershaw every single start is going to be better than any pitching prospect who's going to come up this year. Like just probabilistically, it's not that there isn't somebody who could come up who could be better than Kershaw, but most likely there is nobody who's going to be better than Clayton Kershaw on a per start basis. And the seven projection systems, which are really just one projection system that they now have in the boxes at Fangraphs, Jeff, it is on the Fangraphs player boxes are drive me crazy now, because they're all the same thing. They're all just derivatives of the same things. Anyways, that's a discussion for the playing time part of it. They all have Clayton Kershaw for between 13 and 15 starts. And if you knew you were going to get 13 to 15 starts out of Clayton Kershaw in the second half of this year on the Dodgers, there's certainly an argument to be made to draft him in a 15-team league. 12-team, it's a little bit weird to me, but 15-team league, I guess you can just stream easier, so it's easier to survive with six event spots maybe in the OC. Anyways, I think there's an argument. I just don't think it's something I want to do, but I think there's a good argument for it because until Clayton Kershaw is bad, he's only been either good or unhealthy. And I think there's a good chance he's going to come back. Whether he's going to make 13 starts, that seems aggressive to me. I would take the under on that.
Yeah, I think it's when he comes back and when is he going to start hitting that five innings?
Yep.
He would be back later and throwing five innings, or he could come back early and they could just be throwing three and then, at least the team could get three innings out of him and then run out someone else.
I'll give you a crazy call. I think that Clayton Kershaw will finish the season higher on the player rater than Walker Buehler. And it's not that I think Walker Buehler won't come back in a month or 6 weeks. I think Clayton Kershaw is going to be good for 2-3 months, whereas I think Walker Buehler is going to be mediocre for
it's not months. Crazy at all. I agree with you.
So
I actually agree with you.
So that's not an argument to draft Clayton Kershaw. That's an argument not to draft Walker Buehler. But I think I'd rather a stash Clayton Kershaw than feeling I need to start rolling out Walker Buehler in mid-May when he's back.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's definitely something I wouldn't want to do, but I could definitely see the reason why someone would do it, especially the using the word July-ish, August-ish. If it's July-ish, if it's, say, right after the All-Star break, that might be worthy of a hold. Like you said, if you can make it, if your team isn't suffering and you need to move that roster spot. Also kind of the old, hey, let's get him out of the pool for that really large sum of money, right? And maybe release him and pick him up a little earlier on the cheap instead of waiting for their old $400 bang.
That is the one thing I'd say, and I know everybody who's listening to this podcast is a sharp player. Make a little note somewhere which of your leagues, your fab leagues, he's picked up on and in the drafts and which ones he's not. Because the ones he's picked up in the drafts is in the NFBC, at least, if you play a home league, your rules, check your own rules. He's available to, and then is dropped 2 weeks into the season because of injuries. You can pick him up for a dollar. And I just like having a little list of these guys. There's a lot of these guys. DeGrom is the same thing. Scherzer is the same thing. Like all of these injured players, they're only eligible to be picked up in fab before they come back if they were drafted. Same thing with rookies. I always have a list coming out of my drafts of everyone, fab league I have, of just rookies to keep paying attention to. You can search, obviously, your league. But what this lets you do by having a list ahead of time is knowing it's June 1st. I have a dead spot in my roster. I don't really need it this week. I'm going to bid him a dollar for Kershaw and start trying to stash him now, even though it's early. Anyways, just a little thing.
If it is the NFBC, it's not showing up right now, and I don't have an NFBC league, but there's a leagues available tab.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can click on that and just see where there's – if they are available. I remember when Scooble was that way, went and looked and there was two leagues and he was just starting to throw back. And I was immediately put bids in on those two leagues. So
speaking of DeGrom, I want to ask you guys a quick question. I had a thought about him as I was doing my last DC in the later rounds. I don't have any of him. I haven't picked any of the injured pitchers. I think maybe just one Rasmussen. This was in one of the first drafts. I've just been really tentative to try to latch on to the idea of Springs or Rasmussen or DeGrom. But what if DeGrom comes back? Do you guys think there's any shot he would just come back in as a limited relief role or a closer if they need one? You think or build him up? Just given the contract and what he might mean to the team in the future.
I think it depends on what they need.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's true. Kind of a weird team. I just saw someone whining that they didn't add anyone. And it's you're getting some really good pitchers coming in at the All-Star break, and your minor league system's got one of the top four guys, if not the top one, depending on who you're talking to. You added another rookie. It's I don't know. They could probably use some more bullpen arms, but they've got reinforcements coming, and the starting lineup just won the World Series. Like, you're missing a starter right now in Montgomery, but it's like looking pretty good. And like I said, they're going to get, I just think whatever role he does, and I could see him limit it. So like, just wait till the playoffs and then you can just air it out.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the only thing with DeGrom out of the bullpen is, and I'm obviously not a doctor. I won't make the joke that it's in my head, but internet baseball, fantasy baseball doctors. I just don't know with his injury history, whether you want him having to warm up in like quickly in October. You've got 20 pitches. It's go time, Jacob. Or he needs a full warm-up, knowing 2 days in advance that he has to start gearing up. Like, I just don't know how his body reacts to that. But obviously the thought of Jacob DeGrom being able to go for two innings at a time in the playoffs is, like, wild.
Yeah.
His body can do it.
It is definitely wild, for sure.
What's amazing is I'm just looking on my spreadsheet. I really haven't spent a lot of time looking at DeGrom this year. So I have like an aggregated 24 innings for Jacob DeGrom of just like 3-4 different projections combined. His contribution to WHIP in those 24 innings from an SGP perspective is, I'm just flipping this around as I talk, because it's like, it's a very high number for a 24 inning. So he would do, if he hits his projections in 24 innings, almost as much good to your WHIP from just an SGP perspective as Zach Gallen in like 60 innings. Like, from an SGP perspective, Jacob DeGrom is just such a cheat code. Like, he just doesn't make any sense how good he is.
Absolutely. Even Kershaw, when I give him like even 50 innings on my sheet, he's still like a top 550 player. Like, that's why in a draft champion, when you're, in those later rounds, and as much as he keeps falling, I get to feel a little secure now that he actually has a contract. And you're like, okay, we know he's contracted to pitch at some point in the season. Beforehand, you may have just been a little concerned. He may just be like, all right, I'm done. You know, I'm not coming back from this, and I've done enough.
Like, he's ahead of Grayson Rodriguez is way behind Jacob DeGrom in terms of contribution to WHIP in 24 innings. Like, it just doesn't make any sense, but that's the math. It's crazy to me.
That's what happened when you're the GOAT. Brandon Marsh just recently had arthroscopic knee surgery, and they said he's expected to be out 3 to 4 weeks. I had arthroscopic knee surgery once, and I definitely got back in that timeline, but interesting to see what Mr. Marsh could do. Definitely had a nice uptick in skills last year, proved he could hit lefties a little better. Jeff, did it give you any hesitation into Brandon Marsh? And if so, maybe did you push up someone like Johan Rojas, or are you fearful maybe they'll sign another outfielder in the coming days?
I don't know if they'll sign another one. If they think they know more with the doctors, we'll find out soon. Like, if they think he'll be back, I think Pache kind of gives him almost the same thing. It's not like Marsh is really great. And so the one thing I do, and it's kind of with everyone, I don't even know if the number is right, is I dock him a little bit for the offseason a surgery, because most of them don't ever seem to come back. So I just do it across the board. And if they come to my projection, if that's – I feel like they could kind of get docked too much sometimes, even with Seager. I put it in and I was like, oh, he should move down about 7 spots in the projections, and they kind of drop below that, and he's kind of moved right back up. I think some others have probably kind of worked the numbers and kind of come to the same conclusion. But I just kind of do all off-season surgeries that same way, because I've got to take a discount, but I can't just randomly make up which one I think is worse or better or so forth. And in this case also, I think I docked him a half a month in playing time. Like, they think he's going to be back that first day, but he may be sitting quite a bit. Like, they're going to take it slow. They probably take it slow with him.
First off, Rob, you're really upholding the proud tradition that Van Lee started of being able to drop random injuries that other players had.
I was right for the job.
Absolutely. So like it's a fitting tribute to our former host and friend there. that's to me more
interesting. Are you muted yourself? You muted yourself.
He unplugged himself.
Oh, he unplugged himself. Yeah. And he's still muted. He got so excited about it, ready to tell me. I think I read his lips too. He goes, and that's not a compliment, Rob. That's just telling you you're injury prone.
Potato, potato. You're still in the best shape of your life coming into the season. So it's all good. The one thing now, looking at the Brandon Marsh situation, that strikes me is for a team that has real designs and real reasons to think that while they're nowhere near the Braves, that they're going to compete for certainly a wild card spot. Philadelphia's bench is atrocious. Like, they really do, regardless of Marsh. I just don't know that Edmundo Sosa, Christian Pache, and Jake Cave is quite the bench that they're looking for. So it'll be interesting if they add, even if Marsh is fine, I think they can upgrade there with the 500 Boris clients who are still free agents right now.
Yeah. Seemingly all of them are still free agents.
Yeah. Maybe your friend Tommy Pham signs there. Rob, are you getting a little bit nervous about Tommy Pham? Or did I miss it? Is he on a team? Like, did I miss an announcement of Tommy Pham having a starting job somewhere? No, because I feel like I'm on top of things now. Like, I know where Sonny Gray plays, so I think, like, if Tommy Pham is somewhere with a starting job, I'd hear about it. I think, like, Jeff Zimmerman would include it maybe in Mining the News at some point. So you're getting a little nervous, a little bit, poco nervous.
It's gotta be a little bit. Yeah. On the last draft, he like slipped a little and I got a little gun shy because almost like, well, I have enough it right now, so I don't need more.
I think he's going to sign with the Milwaukee Brewers. I think Milwaukee's going to add three more guys still.
Yeah, I mean, that would be wild to add to their young, you know, competing outfield. But I think, I mean, I'm not concerned with him getting a job that he's going to get some decent playing time. I would like to see him get full run, you know, but either way, even at his current ADP of three. Of three
Ron Howard, narrator voice, he did not get full run. He scraped 350 plate appearances together.
Just semi-breaking news in the Discord. We've been talking about Kenley Jansen recently, but they said the sweepstakes appears to be down to the Dodgers and Phillies and expect him to be dealt by Monday when pitchers and catchers report. That will be interesting. Do you guys have
that's going to screw up somebody's closer situation.
Ooh, it's going to fuck a lot of my Hoffman shares that I had late, but you know, definitely backed off the Evan Phillips train too. I felt like I was really onto him early because I was like, you know, they did it once without him. They don't really need anyone to come in, sub in. And the longer it took Hader to sign, the more I backed off of Phillips. And then when Hader signed, I was like, oh, maybe I'll get back into it again. I haven't drafted him since, but there's definitely some concern there. Either where he goes, you know, for Alvarado, for Phillips, and everyone down the line, you know. You guys still think Canley is still a solid option despite all the, you know, heart issues and other issues he's had, you know, in the last couple of seasons?
I think he's fine.
I'm
not excited to roster him. They kind of, with his contract, like, it more seems like teams want to use him as a closer because they just will keep their younger guys cost controlled. So that's what they can do is they'll use him until he's ineffective and then they'll go to someone else if they want to try to win games, which if it's the Dodgers and the Phillies, they want to win games. So he'll have the closer's job probably in both cases until he fails at it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't love Kenley, but there's enough closers going earlier than him. Notably Alexis Diaz and Jordan Romano, who I think are being like mis Those all three of those guys should be going right near each other, and they should be going where Kenley's going, not where Romano and Diaz are going. So I can't fade every closer. At a certain point, you have to like some people. So I think where Kenley's going is fine for Kenley. Do I think he's going to make it through 6 months as a closer? He could. You know, he's good enough still.
Yeah, I definitely think he's good enough still. I mean, he still got the swing and strike rate is decent. I know a lot of other things came down, but still get the volume of saves. So I know Alexis Diaz had a terrible second half, and I haven't touched him at all this whole season.
Oh, here's better breaking news. So former New York Mets general manager Billy Epler has been suspended by Major League Baseball through the 2024 World Series for improper use of the injured list, including, quote, the deliberate fabrication of injuries.
Nice. Good.
He doesn't have a job, does he?
Yeah. Wait until Major League Baseball finds out about the Los Angeles Dodgers and Tampa Bay Rays if they're clamping down on made up injuries.
Oh my God. Scandal. I mean, that's interesting. I wonder to the extent of the fabrication, is it just anything, just making up an injury to put the guy on the IL? I mean, there's so many ways we can, well, they'll have to audit, like you said, all the Dodgers and Rays moved during the COVID years for sure.
Oh yeah.
So Romano, Rob, you just worried about the back issues?
It's the combination of the back issues, and I think this is linked. His command and control in the second half of the season, really the last 4 months of the season, were bad. Mm-hmm. And I think they were probably directly linked to the back issues. But to put the two of them together, I'm not anti-Romano. Like, I think he is the closer. And there's a very good chance he shows up healthy to spring training. Like, he's not Max Scherzer with back injuries. He is the type of, like, we all say back injuries don't just heal, except we all know from experience, my back sometimes hurts and then it doesn't hurt for 2 years. So it's not that I'm worried, as in, I don't think he can survive a season as the closer. It's that he's still being drafted as a pretty elite closer. Like, he's cheaper than last year, so people are like, well, it's come down, but you're still paying like a premium price for Jordan Romano, and he just wasn't that pitcher for 4 months last year. So why do you spend a premium pick on a closer? It's peace of mind, it's lock it in. If not, like, it's not, unless you're getting like Edwin Diaz or old Hader, when it's like, and you're getting elite strikeouts, elite ratios. I don't think anybody thinks they're getting that with Romano. I think they think they're getting, I have a anchor closer right now. And I just don't know if the command and control are not linked to the back and he's just off a little bit. They have a deep enough bullpen that it is tough to survive on a good team with other options with that kind of walk rate. And so that's just a concern. If he was going three rounds later, if he was going four rounds later, if he was going to pick what's Kenley at, like 115, 120 ish, totally different discussion. Then I like Romano more than Kenley. So it's not me shitting on him. And if you have Romano, don't stay up at night being like, fucking Silver, I can't believe he's messing with my head here at all. It's just, I think it's become like hipster to say, I don't like Alexis Diaz, who's going exactly where Romano is because of the control issues. Like, I just don't think he's that good. I think they're very similar, Alexis Diaz and Romano, in terms of my concerns, but also would it shock you if they save 38 games and are the closer for all 6 months? No, of course it wouldn't shock me at all.
Okay. Yeah, that's not definitely a fair assessment of it. I guess like my memory of him, you know, I don't watch nearly as much as Blue Jays as you, but I guess my memory of him from having him in leagues was, I guess, more centered on like the last, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks, I thought was where he really...
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Lost it.
Yeah, right? It was roller coaster.
Yeah.
And to be fair, this is a fair critique. Every fan of every team thinks their closer sort of sucks. Like, unless you have Mariano Rivera as your closer, or like Pete Edwin Diaz, because it's such a sweat experience when your closer comes in and they walk the first guy. And it's like, how can you be the closer and walk the first guy? This guy, like, what's going on here? So, like, Romano's numbers were, like, his walk rate did go up. So, like, I'm not just pulling it out of my, he caused me stress. But there, but it's a fair critique to say, like, you watched him, Rob, and it he caused you stress last season in a way he didn't the previous year. And that's totally fair.
Yep. Without a doubt. All right. We'll be right back with some ADP talk right now. I just want to give you a little information about UnderdogFantasy.com. If you want to go head over there and get started playing best ball leagues, which is really simple. It's a best ball format, so all you do is join the league. You draft your team, that's it. No waivers, no trades, no in-season management. You draft 20 players and get the best cumulative scores in your starting lineup, which is three pitchers, three infielders, three outfielders, and one flex each week of the regular season. If you get started, you go to underdogfantasy.com, sign up with my promo code PULLHITTER, and Underdog doubles your initial deposit up to $100 right into your pocket. They have several different formats. The Dinger right now is only a $10 entry, $750,000 in total prizes, with $100,000 going to first. They have a little bit more high stakes league, $75, $100 entry. One is a solo shot, so only one entry with that format. So go over to underdogfantasy.com, check out the format. Again, it's really simple. You get your draft done really quick, super fun and easy to do. Underdogfantasy.com, sign up with my promo code PULLHITTER. Get started today. Let's move on over to some ADP breakdowns. We're looking at the last 14 drafts from the draft champions, 15 team draft and hold over on the NFBC. That's from January 20th to February 6th. And we'll lead off here with recently traded Ryan Pepiot from the Dodgers to the Rays, going at 195, as early as 181, and his latest 208. Nice little narrow band there for Mr. Pepiot. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Pepiot? Bob, what's your thoughts on Pepiot?
I'm sorry. I was muted there.
He was excited about Pepiot that
I just passed out, man. Couldn't handle it. I wish he hadn't gotten traded. I actually kind of liked him, like, kind of hidden there on the Dodgers. But he's going to get more of a run now, and obviously everyone's looking at him and the greatness that he could be. Just checks all the boxes. He went long in the games last year, averaging six innings per start. He throws at least an average fastball. He's got one decent secondary. The one issue is he kind of was limited in innings last year. Mm-hmm. So just from some work I've done, that'll be in the next season's the process. It'll be tough for teams to push him over like 120 innings. I think that's kind of a key. If he's only thrown like 64 last year, teams don't push him much more than that. Get him 60, maybe 70 more innings from one season on the high end. So, and it's also the Rays, so they're definitely not going to do it. Like, mm-hmm. But who knows? They also, like, two out of every three pitchers gets Tommy John surgery with them. So, I mean, that's an issue too. But I think that the talent's fine. Everything looks good that way. It's just how much is he going to throw and if he can stay healthy.
So it's interesting to me, and maybe we can lump them. We talked about Shane Baz at the end of last episode or two episodes ago. You have Pepiot, and then you have Cy Savali going right after. So they're going literally within five picks of each other. And I'm curious with you guys, mm-hmm. Is there one of them, if is there one that you really like? Do you like all of them or do you like none of them between those three? Because it's just an interesting coincidence that they all kind of congregate at the exact same spot.
You want to go first, Jeff?
I was kind of thinking like with the... Yeah, it was kind of – I didn't even know if it would matter with my build. I'm kind of out on Baz until I see him throw a little bit more. Baz. And I would go with Pepiot and Savali. There's another thing is there's just a lot of there's a few pitchers that I like going after them more than them. And in the two drafts I've actually done, I've taken them first. So that's just kind of where I stand with that. Like, I would, in all fairness, take Charlie Morton all the time over the guys just listed. So, but I don't see any reason I wouldn't draft them. It's just kind of more of a difference in priorities so far.
Rob?
I'm probably going to rate them Savali, Pepio, Boz. I'm agreeing with Jeff. I love Boz, you know, last year, and just thinking he was going to be like really the next big elite arm to make a mark as a youngster. I'm just really worried about the workload, everything. The injury history, maybe like at 280, pick 280 would have been a lot more, you know, appetizing for me. It's still in a range where there's just a lot of good pitchers, I think, that you can go to. And Savali, I just liked what the Rays did with him. He is injury, you know, prone-ish, so you can learn to expect that. But I like the changes that he made. You know what you're going to get from him. And Pepio, you know, he could really be lights out. He really was just throwing strikes away from being effective like he became last season. And I remember, like, noticing how it's just like the ball percentages on just on a couple of his pitches changed and his release point changed. So you can, like, kind of see, like, okay, maybe they work with him in the offseason. And I don't know what the Rays will add, subtract from him, but I'm sure it will be at the upside. It will be like Zach Eflin-esque. But like Jeff said, I don't know if he can make it, you know, past 130 innings, or the Rays won't let him, which is, you know, kind of why, like, Zach Littell, like, going really kind of later is interesting, because, like, if Taj Bradley takes a step and he's firmly in the top five, does that leave, like, Zach Littell out, or do they go to some six-man-ish type of thing, or is Littell just become the guy who cleans up the inning, kind of like Josh Fleming, and makes spot starts when those guys do get hurt? So there's a lot of interesting stuff in that.
And as Jeff says, it's the Rays, so four of the five of them will have Tommy John surgery this year. I shouldn't put that in the universe, because it's mean. It is a bit interesting to me that we as a fantasy community, many of us, see Glasnow going to the Dodgers, and we say, oh man, I can't wait to see what the Dodgers do with Glasnow. Like, they're going to get him. Like, there's going to be improvements because the Dodgers are finally going to get him. And we see Pepio going to the Rays, and we're like, man, I can't wait to see what the Rays are capable of doing with this guy who came from this bum franchise and what they're going to be able to do here. Both franchises are great. Like, why do we assume that boy, I wonder what the Dodgers missed. And then it's like, Tampa clearly didn't quite know how to maximize Glasnow, but now the Dodgers, well, it'll be interesting to me. At this time last year, Rasmussen and Springs were going to my memory again, early 200s, coming out of the DCs, heading into drafts. And we all remember where they were going by the time we were sitting at tables in Vegas in the 8th, 9th, 10th round. It'll be, my sense is, these guys, Savali and Pepio and Baz Boz, are not as sexy. Baz is the one exception. Like, if he shows up at spring training and is going full volume, meaning, like, as their starters build up, like, from one inning to two innings to five innings, he's going full brow and is like top 10 in spring training and strikeout minus walk rate. Like, if he starts doing things like that, he's a guy who could easily start jumping up. Yeah. Savali is a known entity. Like, I don't know what's going to change with the evaluation people make about Savali, other than other starting pitchers getting hurt and therefore all starting pitchers going up. But that's not what happened with Springs and Rasmussen. They were just guys, like, collectively, they were on all of our target lists. So we all started chasing them until we got to stupid, stupid places with them, it turned out. But it'll be interesting if these Tampa guys have some helium going into live drafts.
The one thing I could say about Pepio is, I think I pointed this out before, is it's really tough to come up with a consensus on his projections. especially since he's a pitcher that's moved between AAA and the majors, and he's also moved between starting and relieving. Like Steamer has him at like a 4.5 ERA, and Zips has him under 4. Those are just the two I have. Like, I'm guessing there's going to be a huge range, but he's one that you probably need to sit down or even ask around to see if someone could find like just a plain starter projection or a plain closer one, because last year he was far from anything stable.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say his relief outings were 5 innings, 4 innings, 6 innings, 6 innings, 3 innings. So it's not like he was making 1 inning stints or 3 batters. He faced 19, 15, 24, 23. I think that could be built in as starter projection. No? Or am I wrong?
I think you could, but the problem is when you have a computer. No, I'm saying with the computer looks at him like he was relieving this long. So right.
Yeah.
So the conversion formula you're saying that we use for strikeout rate, walk rate, and so on is he was a reliever last year going to starting.
Right. And so they may think he might actually be worse, but who knows what it's doing, but you're seeing the large variation, and I'm guessing that's what's happening.
The largest variation is actually our next pitcher. I have never seen projection systems differ on a pitcher more than the next guy we're going to talk about.
Shoto Imanaga?
Yes. So yes. For those who don't know, the bat has him for, and I know Jeff hates ERA, but you can't have this discussion without talking about ERA. So the bat has him for a 5.48 ERA, and the best one of the ones up at the Fangraphs is Zips at 3.55 ERA. I don't remember in the public projection era, I don't remember a real starting pitcher. So I don't mean like a guy on the Rockies who's just a rando, but an actual legit, we're talking and taking them in the top 300 picks, where two good projection systems, and both the bat and Zips are good projection systems, have a 2-run difference between the players. Obviously, this relates to the translation formula that, let's say, Derek is using for Japanese players, but it's fascinating to me that you can take the same pitcher's stats and come up with a 5.5 and a 3.5 ERA based on the exact same things.
Yeah, it was the ones I ran my comps. All it is literally the 8 closest pitchers from what they threw in Japan to the U.S. It's like not anything more than that. And the guys that had the similar stats to Japan when they came over, he's looking at more like a 4.5 ERA. So it's kind of in between the two. My comps were like Colby Lewis, Kikuchi, Miles Michaelis. So those are the closest ones. Nick Martinez. So like, I'm not seeing him as great. Like, I'm just going to back off from him. I think other people will rather take a chance on him.
Yeah, it's interesting though. Like, if Zips is right, if Steamer is right, he's a great buy right now in drafts. Like, he's dramatically being underdrafted if they're right. I have no idea who's right, obviously, but like, he has a better strikeout to minus walk rate in Zips than Blake Snell, than Grayson Rodriguez, than George Kirby, than Bailey Ober, than Dylan Cease, than Zach Wheeler. Like, those are decent pitchers. And again, I don't know that there's any reason to think Dan is right and everybody else. It's not everybody else's. Like, Steamer likes him too. So I don't know. Like, and I'm trying to wrap my head around, like, is there something I should be looking for in spring training that would get me to buy? Is this just if this is where the price is, this is a good risk because of the upside. And sometimes you got to take risks in drafts because he could be a 5.5 or he could be a 4.5. Like, forget the bat projection, forget Cardi's projection. If Jeff is right and he's Colby Lewis, this is a shit. There's really good pitchers going around here and that I know are pretty good. Like, I know what Savali is. I like, Anyways, I know who the, what the upside of some of the other pitchers who we're going to talk about in the next few picks are. They also have great upside. So it's a real, it's a tough call what to do with him here.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough call. I got one share of him very early in draft season, and the price I got him at will, like, I will refuse to pay this price now. That's just the way it is. But I think it's too much of a risk. Last year I was very hesitant with Senga, and, you know, at the beginning of the season, didn't draft him anywhere. Because I don't know, you know, I really don't know how to make that conversion and what to trust. I know that Imanaga had a better K percentage than Yamamoto last season, right? Overseas. So, and I know there's a lot of talk about his, whatever, the four seam ride. It's just really tricky from a left hander and how he throws it and the velocity. But I don't know. I'm just like, I'd rather, you know, make a bad decision on something I feel more, you know, knowledgeable about than making that case.
So I'll make the actual argument I have, which is Yu Darvish is going two picks from now. So we'll talk about Yu Darvish in a second. Yu Darvish to me has, if he's Yu Darvish again, top 20 starting pitcher upside, and the downside is Yu Darvish is terrible. But I understand who Yu Darvish is. I know what I'm buying with Yu Darvish, and I think the ceiling and floor of a guy who hasn't thrown a ball in Major League Baseball, you can't convince me, even with age difference, that his upside is better than peak Yu Darvish as of this, as for 2024. I'm not talking career in 2024. I think Yu Darvish, if everything comes together, Yu Darvish is still capable of the guy who was going in the fourth round last year. So if I'm going to take, if I want a high variance starting pitcher at this point on my roster, I don't know why I would take him over Yu Darvish because Zips likes him. Does 100%. That make sense? Tell me I'm crazy if you think I'm crazy on that.
No, I don't think you're crazy. I would 100% take Yu Darvish over him. This is kind of maybe like a something that popped up in his forearm before, from what I've kind of read in between the lines. It was bone chips in the right elbow inflammation. Another thing I know a lot about.
I know you're not.
Cheers, man. Cheers. And I don't know if he had them removed. There's never been any confirmation around that. I would assume, and I would hope that they were. But yeah, I mean, this is obviously had a volatile career at some parts of his career, but last year we were really in on Yu Darvish. And if he just can come in and chuck, even at, I mean, 70% of his best seasons, I think he got a steal at this pick, you know, for Yu Darvish in this range. He could be really, you know, not to put that phrase, a league winner in a main event, but if he stays in this range, that would just be a huge, huge boost if he can pull out the old Yu Darvish seasons.
And to be clear, I wasn't making a Yu Darvish like argument. I'm just saying you can't convince me that a rookie pitcher has higher upside than a guy who is a top 35 player a season ago. And like in 2022, he finished ahead of Carlos Rodon. Carlos Rodon was incredible in 2022. He finished ahead of Zach Gallen. Zach Gallen threw like 90 innings in a row of shutout baseball at the end of the season. Yu Darvish finished ahead of all of these guys on the player radar a season ago. So I'm not predicting that. I'm not projecting that. But you cannot, but if you think there's a 10% chance he's ever that guy, 5% chance, I just think that's a higher likelihood than a rookie pitcher.
Yep. I would agree. Jeff, what do you think about Darvish this season?
It would be nice to know for sure if he's had the surgery. Because This is one where it's been like, oh yeah, he had it, like, you know, he threw a couple times and we just went and had the surgery like a week ago and we just don't know. Like, it would not surprise me one bit that everyone just starts wigging out when that comes in. But I'm just kind of reading back on some where it's like he had the bone spurs. He was going to shave them off, but bone spurs actually make sure your elbow doesn't throw out. So you want to have some bone spurs in there, but not have them painful. So who knows with that? He got legit. The strikeout ability is there. It's all 100% on this elbow. I think it's one if I was looking at it in one league where people just aren't drafting pitchers. I don't get it. that I'm in. Like, we went five straight. Like, we're just like, okay, if you guys are just going to give us this way, we'll go with it. But when you get Nolan the fifth, that's when you're like, wait a second. With Darvish, I think it's kind of with your build, but you have to understand that you could have nothing. Like, this elbow and the surgeries, possible surgery and all that that's going on could be an issue. And maybe it depends on how San Diego's doing, which right now I don't even know if they have a team. Like, I think, you know, Sammy Reed's playing outfield for him for right now.
Look, Sammy's got good range still. He's come out from behind the plate, and I have full faith that Sammy can still flag him down. There's no doubt what Jeff said is true, especially if you're drafting right now. He is 100% the kind of guy that the second after you pick him, you could see something on Twitter that says he's out for the season. Like, he's 1,000% the guy. You leave the draft room, you leave the draft table, and it's like, and he's done. Yeah, that's you for sure could get zero from him this year.
Yeah, I think that's what you just have to kind of take into account. So I may actually go with the next guy before him, but it's still both of them have got F grades on their injuries, so it's like
I think if you're building a staff and a draft champion, then you just like, you know, you're the type that likes to go pitching late and you're pounding offense. I don't think to go to like Yu Darvish as your SP3 would be a smart move, or SP4. But if you got, you know, if you're five deep, maybe even six deep, and you just want to like, yeah, like if I take Yu Darvish and any one of my other guys in the top doesn't have a good season and Yu hits his 80th percentile outcome, I feel confident with just him adding to the staff. I'm looking at last year's main event ADP at this mark 200, 205, and I see Clark Schmidt at 205. I see Trevor Rogers at 210. I see Taillon at 212. Hayden Wesneski at 215. Oh, God. So making a mistake here seems to be
likely.
A thing.
Likely.
Likely. Yeah, likely.
My understanding is that at some point in the 7 hours of the podcast, Phil Dussault points out we're really bad at ranking like ADP starting pitchers. Was that something you guys talk about on the podcast?
We talked. He brought up how we're getting better at
picking
hitters, and pitchers are, you know, we haven't, even with all this, you know, new information and projections out.
Did you say it's because, Phil, you're just not telling us which pitchers to pick soon enough in the season so that, like, ADP isn't reflecting your sleepers? Yeah. By the time everybody starts copying your picks, Phil, it's too late for ADP to swing, so it's not an efficient marker. Whereas if you put a list out of who you're targeting, Phil, like in December, then ADP could reflect the Phil rank system. I don't know that would be my critique on why ADP isn't efficient.
That would have been the right answer. We'll stay on pitchers here. We'll go to another off injured, roller coastery type pitcher. Missed the first half, second half. Nathan Eovaldi picked 206, as early as 186, as late as 226. Jeff, you gonna have any Nate Eovaldi this year?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. I gotta see if his velocity rebounds. That was kind of a straight nosedive into like a hole if you're looking at Fangraphs, and it just couldn't come back up from that. But that's just who he is. Like, I think if he's healthy and he's starting the season, you have him, and then when he gets hurt, you let him go. But like I said, in a draft and hold, maybe I would add him. It kind of depends on who else is kind of going around him. I think I might even just take it safe and grab Stroman later. So he's good if he's healthy. Like I said, it's just kind of in and out. I think that's then an OC. He'll probably be added two or three times during the season, added and dropped. And then in the main event, someone will have paid too much and they'll just hold him for the whole time.
So it's interesting to me. Back in the olden day, guys, a guy would go on a crazy playoff run, and you'd pay a playoff tax for him afterwards. And what's interesting about Nate Eovaldi to me is awesome first half, forearm strain, right? Like in the second half, crappy second half. But he was awesome in the playoffs for them. Like not just the five wins, but his strikeout rate was way up. The velocity looked good. If you watch the game, he was great. And I'm not saying it's the right answer, but that's the most recent time we've seen him pitch. And it was in like high leverage, high pressure situations. And he was awesome. So why don't we conclude, therefore, and I'm thinking out loud, that Nate Eovaldi is back? Or do we say, well, because he hasn't been able to do it for six full months, so I'm not paying for it. But the problem with that argument is if you set him and forgot about him last year, other than when he like wasn't pitching, you got a really good season from him. Like the 25 games he pitched, the totality of it was outstanding, and it's certainly outstanding relative to the cost this year. So it's a little bit, I think he should be going earlier. Like I think Nate Eovaldi, assuming he's healthy, and the last time we saw him, he was healthy. I think he's too cheap right now. I think he's a really good pick here, Nate Eovaldi.
I think so too. I mean, Rob, I got to piggyback off of what you said because, you know, we saw him, you know, right after the All-Star break, just 93, 92. It wasn't cutting it. And we're like, here we go again with the Eovaldi. He comes back. He changed a little bit of his release point and some other, you know, Texas magic. But then his last start, I mean, I'm just looking at November 1st box score versus the D-backs. Max 96.6, average 95.4. He averaged 95 on the year. That seems like he's there. And I totally get the whole, the second half thing or the last couple of months. But he still put up, a good line for where you drafted him even last year, which is like a similar spot as this year. So, and even if at the postseason innings, he hit 180 last year, which is his highest since 2021. So I think there is a little bit too much of a Nate Eovaldi always does this thing. And you know what? He gets off to another blazing start and he, you know, you just capture those innings and you move on, you know? So I agree with that postseason thing. I was wondering that myself. I'm glad you brought that up because that's so true. We always get that postseason tax, you know?
And I don't think either. I think we're both saying the same thing. I'm not saying pay because of it. I'm saying like have some, it's a bit of a comfort blanket, certainly as much as whatever he did in spring training would be for me. I don't know. That's just.
Yep. No, 100%. We'll go to St. Louis outfielder Lars Denuthbar. 208 ADPs, earlier 187, as late as 224. Just because we haven't seen him in underwear this year, I think he's taking a little bit of a hit in ADP. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Mr. Newbar here?
He's fine with what you get. It seems like the issue is trying to get all the plate appearances moved around the Cardinals right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the issue, and that's what's bringing him down. If otherwise, like the talent is there, he doesn't need to be, but he was platooned against lefties. Probably someone just hits lefties better than he does.
Right.
But it wasn't needed.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's still going to happen. The talent is like above league average. It's just, I think it, like in an NL only, he'd be great. Like you just have him, you know, he's going to play 80 to 90% of the time. And you just like, you don't have to worry about moving him in and out because there's no other options. I think he just might be a little frustrating when you put him in on Monday and then he's in the lineup and then he doesn't play for the next two games of a three game set, or he's not playing that first game, but then he plays the next two and steals a base and hits a home run. If you're willing to have the frustration of that, know that that's coming. I think he's a fine option. If you get mad about him not being in the lineup, then you probably should grab someone else.
I agree with that. I think that it's a I think he's a really good player, and I think that there's like, I think he's going to find a way to have a big season this year. I think he's like 2010 250 guys don't just fall from trees. So the problem is, I like a lot of the starting pitchers, as has been clear around here. So I think I'll be likely in most drafts going pitching. But if I'm in an auction and Lars Nootbaar is stalling at like $4 or $5, I do like him as a player. And I think guys like with close to 340, 345 WOBAs don't just like, the teams have to find a way to get them in their lineup.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's projected for excellent, you know, WRC plus. Like Jeff mentioned, he doesn't really have a split versus lefties that causes that would deem him not startable versus lefties. And just really improved over the second half of the year, I think, after maybe got over some nagging injuries. And just an impressive profile. I think I would like to see him get a little bit more aggressive in the zone, like 51% zone swing when the league average is 65, you know, maybe being a little too passive there. But, and picks up that ground ball rate a little bit. And I totally wouldn't be surprised for like a monster year at this. But like Jeff said, trying to capture all the plate appearances. Is he going to lead off? Does he move down the lineup or not play versus lefties? Definitely strips away some of the value, but it seems to be a really good spot right here for him.
He's also been freakishly, I would say, unlucky in terms of RBIs in his career. Like a guy who's actually a really good hitter on a good to pretty good team should have way more than 100 RBIs in almost 1,000 career plate appearances. Last year, he had 46 in 500. So, like, it's the opposite of the Jonah Heim. Like, there should be positive RBI regression coming, which when you look at, like, an actual valuation from him through an SGP, there's no explanation why his counting stats should be quite where they are. I think the Cardinals lineup should be a little bit, like, either Goldie and Arenado are going to fall off a cliff and be old, or that lineup will be better this year. So, so I just even if you don't know exactly where he's going to hit, I just think there's some good things going on with him.
I mean, right. he slid off his top two positions for or lineup spots is first and ninth over his career. So it'd be nice to see him drop down to number two.
Yep.
Or have someone else. Yeah. At the bottom of the lineup that can hit.
One more, Nate Lowe.
Yeah, let's do it.
Nate Lowe, first baseman, Texas. Pick 210, as early as 190, and as late as 224 in his last 14 drafts. Jeff, how do you feel about Lowe?
I don't get it. My issue is there are other – he's an average first baseman. Mm-hmm. He has some power, but not – like elite first baseman power. I guess he kind of steals some. I think I'm just going to go a different route. It's not that he's bad. And maybe if I'm just trying to go for a balanced team the whole time when I'm drafting, he's who I'd, he might be an option, but I guess I'm just going to back off. I don't know. Like you said, there's nothing really wrong with him. It's just the type of player at this point. As I probably going to be needing more power at this point. And maybe I do need batting average, and that's why I end up taking him.
Yeah, I mean, he's interesting because his home run to fly, like if you look at his last two seasons, home run fly ball rate is the whole differential in a lot of ways. So if you take the middle, which is basically what projections are looking at, he finished more than 100 picks ahead of this on the player rater last year. A lot of that was volume based. I don't think he's going to get 700 plate appearances again, but you know, maybe Texas just does that with guys. But I like guys who have multiple paths to profit. So if I need a first baseman and a bit of batting average here, I could see Nate Lowe as a potential pick. What do you think, Rob?
I don't have any of him this year, and I'm kind of like maybe have this gut feeling like Jeff has, just like, meh, like, yeah, he's average, but I can also go like an average guy plenty picks later if I wait on first base, right? I mean, how far is he different from Josh Bell and Jose Abreu? You know, that's similar.
That's a fair point.
And I think that's why I've shied away Him. I know there's recent news where the Rangers are talking about working Justin Foscue into like versatility, and he might be like an option to play first versus lefty. But Lowe doesn't really have a platoon thing going on. But you know, I don't know. Just hasn't. I think getting the first baseman later that can replicate this line, the projected line, is what has held me back. But nothing against him, the player, because I just think he's, like you said, Rob, he finished well ahead. 90 runs, 82 ribbies, that'll work.
I mean, dude has played 157, 161 games the last three seasons. So he's missed 11 games over three seasons. So you can say, well, that has to regress. You can also say that means he plays literally every single day. So it's not just he doesn't have a platoon split. It's they put him in the lineup every single day. And in a world where we get so many picks wrong, there's something to be said about just taking guys who are going to play every single day and are pretty good as hitters, and we'll figure this out. Something to be said about that.
No, yeah, right. Now, home run, a fly ball, also to the ground ball. Sometimes he just like gets to stretches where he's very Eric Hosmer-ish, and you're like, oh, don't keep doing this too much.
That's so mean.
No, it's so mean, but he does have those stretches.
Jeff just started getting the sweats and going into the fetal position when you said Eric Hosmer.
All right, boys. Fantastic work again. And we'll be back next week. Any parting words for the crowd before we leave?
No, I'm not here.
Bye.
not compared to the 4-hour one where I kind of go on a late rant. So, really?
Yeah. So I got to make it to the finish. If I'm like 3 hours, 45 minutes in, you're saying this weekend, Jeff, when I'm listening to it, I should keep going.
Yeah, there's been some Twitter thread on it already. But yeah.
Okay. I will. I truly, sincerely do look forward to listening to the epic podcast this weekend.
Awesome. All right, gentlemen. Thanks for everyone for listening to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. We'll catch you next week.